Suzanne Gallagher, and I first wanted to say that I feel honored to be a part of a panel that is called Telling the Story of Healthography. I think that the fact that the APHA's theme is healthography is pretty awesome, because what that means to me is the intersection between health and place, which is, I don't know how we're going to improve health if we're not thinking about place. So I have no relationships to disclose. So I want to start out by talking about participatory photo mapping, which is different than photo voice, actually, because it involves geography and place in addition to participation and photography. So it's been used in many different states in this country and countries in this world to engage community members to advance meaningful place-based health strategies. And it really, it's a suite of methods that involve photographs, and photo elicitation is a very old methodology, narratives, stories, maps, and a deliverable that's identified by the community partner. And so the purpose of this study was within a larger context, and so I was part of a project that was funded through the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin, and it was really looking at the larger question of obesity in a specific population in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we were looking at using participatory strategies to get at sort of the depth of the meaningful pieces of youth perceptions of eating and food and physical activity. And so we were looking at using community-based participatory approaches to gain a deep understanding of social environments with Latino children in elementary school K through 8. And then to use participatory photo mapping to engage with youth to understand how their environments and perceptions of their environments affect their behavior. And so our goals, and these goals were developed together with the young people that we work with, were to describe, assess, and document. So describing the student's food and recreation environment, assessing their emotions and appraisal of the food and recreation environment, and document how they described and assessed their own emotions about their food and recreation environment. And so I just want to go into a little bit into the theory and methods of the methodology just so that you can see how it works. And so really it starts out with a geography. And I want to point out here that maps are not place. Maps represent place. And so it's really important that when we're talking about maps that we remember that it actually represents actual places on the planet. So it starts out with a geographic information system. It's overlaid with qualitative data, and so it makes it a pretty authentic mixed methodology. So this is called sometimes a qualitative GIS. So we're overlaying the map with photographs and stories and people's perceptions of those stories, and finally looking at social networks and how people interact with each other. And this becomes really important when we're looking at how people get their information, how they share information about things. And so, and the other thing that's really important to note here is that when you're doing community university partnerships, a lot of times it's a collaborative effort, and it's important to make a distinction between a tool and a method. A lot of times community partners really need a tool to get at the information they need, whereas researchers tend to go much more into the rigor of the actual methodology. And so somewhere in there we need to collaborate and understand that the process is, it's going to, we all have different needs. And so also just when it comes to participatory photo mapping in community settings, just a little bit more about the theory, it's really based on developing culturally appropriate study design, working together with our community partners and them working together with us, building trust between researchers and community members, and evaluating and measuring preferred outcomes and communicating the results to people who can actually make change. And I really loved, Janice, the action piece, and that we do this work because we want something to come of it and not for any other reason. So a bit about the school demographics. There were 860 kids enrolled in the school, 98% Hispanic, 80% received free and reduced lunch, 39% had an elevated body mass index. And so in our larger study, 180 young people enrolled, and out of those 180, 30 volunteered for the qualitative piece, the participatory photo mapping piece, and this is just a breakdown of the young people. We worked with kids in each of the grades, and each grade had its own cohort, so we didn't work with the kids all together. We worked with them in their specific grades. This is a spatial distribution of where the kids are, and you can see, can you see when I do this? So that's where the school is. And so, you know, some schools, you go to it based on where you live. At this school, people from Milwaukee, from all over Milwaukee, were coming to this school, not necessarily living near it. And this is just a snapshot of how we did data analysis. It's an example of, I've used in vivo, I've used other forms of qualitative data analysis, but what I find works really well for me is to use word with a photograph, and that the narrative that goes with the photograph stays with the photograph, and that the photographs are mapped and geolocated. So we coded the narrative, we geocoded the photograph and the narrative, and we mapped them all. And so here are my results. And so one of the results that came was the importance of place. And the research showed that the family unit, and not the urban landscape, defined the physical boundaries of where the youth were allowed by their parents to go. And so this became very much a part of how the youth experienced their environment. A lot of the environment was experienced either on foot or in cars. One of the strategies used by this school was there was no bike racks, for example. People, you know, talk about how kids don't bike to school anymore, but one of the school strategies was to get parents to the school, and so they really wanted the parents to be driving the kids to school, and that would be when they would connect with the parents. And so a lot of the kids were getting, you know, they were getting to and from the school using cars. So they spend a lot of time being active in and around their home. When we got the map back, we were surprised to see that there's a lot of activity happening in the alleyways. So, and the kids reported that they have regular physical activity at home and at school. So they were physically active in the alleyways and in their yards, and they had opportunities to be physically active every single day at school. This school was very rich in physical activity opportunities. And so, ironically, the young people we were working with identified walking to the gas station to get snacks as a physical activity opportunity. And so they say, we walk here, it's a block away, that's where I go to get with my cousins on a Friday night when we have nothing to do and we go there and get a bunch of junk food. And so I love this because it just shows how complicated what we're doing is, because this is seen by the young people as an asset. You know, I walk to the gas station, I go with my cousins, social bonding, I go and get a bunch of junk food. And they pool their money, they share their money and buy the food and then they share and eat it. And so it's you know, when we're looking at social networks, we want to see this behavior, we want to see bonding behavior, and it's just, you know, telling that it's bonding over junk food, which reflects the complicated nature of this work we're doing. And so this is the park right across the street from the school where they go after school. And so some of the older young people are taking care of the younger young people at the park, and they play, and they're physically active right across the street. Although I have to say that the school administrators said, you know, tell your people we don't need any more parks. And he meant the my co-researchers. And so it was really interesting that when it came to the assumption-based decision-making that we have, we make an assumption that if you build a park, people will go and use it to play, and that is not true, depending on who you're talking to. So another theme of this project was food, and they had a lot to say about food and snacks and a lot more than physical activity. I don't know of those of you that are working in obesity prevention, that it seems to be pretty common that nutrition seems to sort of trump physical activity somehow. and it seemed like the kids had a lot more fun talking about food. And this is a picture, and by the way, I ate lunch with the kids every day, and it was one of the ways that I did participant observation and had a chance to get to know them and talk to them. And on the day that this meal was served, the young person said, "This is what I ate well yesterday in school. This is really good. I like the Salisbury steak and the corn." And I wrote self and collective efficacy because when we were doing this project and on this day that this meal was served, one of the young people came up to me and said, "You're not going to change our school menu, are you?" And I have to say that I really cared about that, because even though I can look at this and say, this is not good for you, they love it. And so when it comes to engaging with youth, and we want to change their food environment, and we want to do it without them, I just think it's a mistake. We need to be conscious of self and collective efficacy in engaging youth. And if youth like their school lunches, that should matter. And again, it's just complicated. So meals at home, they get meals at home. My mom cooks every other day at home. She makes the best dinners. This is here, a pot of rice with chunks of meat. Being a Puerto Rican and having a mom who cooks Puerto Rican food, we eat this type of food about 3 times a week. I just love my culture's food. My family and I have this for dinner. So the food environment at home was very rich. And so then transportation, a lot of traveling in cars. The built environment is experienced mostly on cars and on foot. A lot of family bonding happens in the cars. A typical weekday, this map portrays travel by cars from the school to home, and you can see that they're going and running errands on their way home. So the kinds of places that they're going is, so the GPS tracker showed us that they are visiting fruit markets. The Mexican grocery store in Milwaukee called El Rey is very rich with nutritious foods, and that it can be purchased in the local neighborhood. But they're also going to McDonald's, and they say, "This is my favorite fast food restaurant. My mom would take us here to get food about once every 2 weeks." So, you know, we have this assumption that young people are eating fast food every day. Maybe they are in this specific small geography. The young people weren't eating fast food every day. And when they were going to McDonald's, they weren't eating a meal. They might get an ice cream cone or a snack or a dessert. So finally, my conclusions, and I'm sorry about all the words on this slide, that the school environment excelled in physical activity opportunity. It was very rich in that. But it needed to rethink the nutrition environment, which isn't going to be easy because they get a lot of subsidized food. And so it's not very easy for this particular school to change their food environment. The home environment is where they're exposed to a lot of the nutritious food and their cultural heritage through home-cooked meals and social networking with extended family. So a lot of extended family eating together. And then socializing with friends and family is linked to food. And also I want to add that it's also linked to parks. And so how a lot of young people used parks was to go with their family and eat in the park, not necessarily play in the park. And they drive to the park, even if it's close. And then they might play soccer, not on the equipment, but they eat together. And so changing the food and nutrition environment outside of the school can be more difficult than in the school. Did I say that right? So food outside of the school is tied to culture and social interactions among family. I think an intervention could be to address the school food environment, keeping in mind that it's complicated. And so again, like most research, further research can focus on school policy. And there's lots of this happening across the nation with the Centers for Disease Control looking at changing policies, wellness policies within schools and districts. And so there's a movement right now that can support this work. And so I wanted to say thank you to the University of Wisconsin for funding this project, and for my mentor and co-PI, Sam Dennis, and my committee chairs, Stephanie Robert and Jonathan Patz, but especially to the young people that I got to know through this project. And this is me. If you have any questions right now or later, you can feel free to contact.